Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tara Bustard on behalf of Appellee Clearwater Insurance Company. With the Court's permission today, I would like to introduce Jeffrey Crowitz, Esquire of Spector Gadden Rosen, who's been admitted pro hoc vice and will be arguing on behalf of Clearwater Insurance Company today.
Thank you. Welcome to the Court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. Hey, Mr. Court. Good morning, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs. My name is Tim Lankick, and I'm here on behalf of Rolando Castillo. With me this morning is my colleague, Natalie Wolf. I respectfully request that 5 minutes of my time be reserved for rebuttal.
Very well.
Members of the Court, the issue in this appeal is whether or not this Court is going to make an exception for Clearwater Insurance Company by upholding an exclusion that limits when its policyholder, Mr. Castillo, is allowed to access underinsured motorist coverage, which he bought and paid for.
Can I start with a real general question here? Is it your position that there can be no limitations on the scope of an insurance policy for a motor vehicle? And what I mean by that is, I realize this is a little bit ridiculous, but what if there were an insurance policy that said, we're insuring you for any time you're driving in the state of Delaware? And if you go out of the state of Delaware, you don't have insurance from us. Is anything along those lines permissible or not?
Let me answer it as follows. When you purchase automobile insurance in Delaware, you're purchasing three separate coverages: liability, uninsured / underinsured, which I'll call UM and UIM, and no fault or personal injury protection. Each of those different coverages are governed by different provisions within the Delaware Code. PIP, no fault, is governed by 21 Delaware Code 2118, subsection F. That section allows for customary exclusions as long as they're consistent with Delaware law. Liability coverage, which you purchase when you buy auto insurance, is allowed to offer reasonable and customary exclusions as long as there is 15/30 in liability coverage, the minimum required by Delaware law. UM and UIM is governed by 18 Delaware Code 3902. The General Assembly did not include a provision in 3902 that would allow for any exclusions. None.
Oh, okay.
2118.
So, well, wait a second.
Yes.
So is it your position that anytime anyone buys automobile insurance in the state of Delaware, they automatically have UIM coverage, no matter what the language of the policy says?
Yes, as long as it's not rejected. UM and UIM can be rejected.
In writing, but it has to be in writing.
It has to be in writing for UM. The subsection B does not have to be in writing, but it has to be offered. And if it's accepted, then no exclusions apply. Because, one, the General Assembly has never included a similar provision like they did in 2118 subsection F. And two, this Court has consistently held since 1978 that all exclusions to UM or UIM are void because of public policy. So the answer to your question is, with regard to UIM, once it is accepted, all exclusions are void. It follows you wherever you go. It doesn't matter whether you're in a government-owned motor vehicle. It doesn't matter whether you're carrying passengers for hire on a DART bus. It doesn't matter if you're even excluded from liability coverage. Those are all the cases that I cited in my papers. If you purchase it, no exclusions, because the public policy is to protect innocent folks who buy supplemental coverage, and so there aren't exclusions that sneak up and catch you. So our position is as follows. The trial judge was correct when he held that 3902 governs this case. He was correct when he said that no exclusions are permitted under 3902. And he was correct when he said endorsement number 6 in the Clearwater policy provides for uninsured and underinsured benefits. And he was correct when he said in his opinion that Delaware law has thus far invalidated all exclusions in underinsured motorist benefits. So our position, members of the Court, is that by finding the exclusion carrying property for hire to be valid, he committed legal error. And the standard review is de novo for this Court. Our position is straightforward and simple. 3902 does not authorize any exclusions for UIM, including the one at issue in this case, which excludes coverage depending on the matter in which the vehicle was being operated.
Well, let me ask another question then. As I understand the facts, and I think this is going to need more inquiry later, but there were two parallel insurance policies, or at least there were supposed to be, that IMF, is it, was buying insurance that would cover your client anytime he was driving his truck for them, and that he was required to buy insurance that would cover the rest of the time. So between the two sets of insurance, there would be 100% coverage, if you will. Why can't that be divided up that way?
My response is as follows. Number one, IMF, when it purchased the policy for the vehicle, rejected UM and UIM. So as it stands now,
okay,
there is no UIM that applies to this accident.
Okay, let's assume hypothetically that you have a situation similar to what we have here, but IMF does its part and buys its insurance that covers him all the time that he's driving for hire, and it has UM, UIM coverage. And by the same token, he has the second set of insurance coverage for when he's not driving for the company. Why would that not be a permissible way of breaking down the respective obligations of the parties and therefore preclude Clearwater from being liable in this case?
Your Honor, I would agree with the premise as it's reasonable as stated. The problem is if that's what Clearwater and other similarly situated insurance companies want to do, then their remedy is with the General Assembly. They should have gone to the General Assembly and said, hey, look, we're selling this policy in your state. We need you to amend 3902 to allow for exclusions like you did in 2118.
So what you're saying is that it doesn't matter whether there had been an understanding that had been fulfilled whereby the individual has coverage during the time that he's working and coverage during the time that he's not working, you still could access the non-working coverage for UIM.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. If, in fact, there was UIM that IMF had purchased, we would be looking to Clearwater for supplemental or to stack, which is permissible under Delaware law.
Okay.
Yep. So turning back to 3902, which is where the analysis should begin, it requires that unless it's rejected, that every policy have UIM. And the site to begin with is Holden versus Aetna. And that's the first time this court held that UIM cannot have any exceptions. And the court held it's of no consequence that once a policyholder purchases UIM, it cannot be eroded by exclusions that lack express statutory authority. And Holden cited Frank versus Horizon, which I'm sure the court's familiar with because it's been cited many times. And again, in Frank, what the argument that the insurance company made was, look, this is optional coverage. If it's optional coverage, why can't we have exclusions? And this court said no. It's even though it's optional, the public policy is to protect innocent policyholders. And the court said that UIM is personal to the insured and not vehicle specific. And that means it doesn't matter whether you're injured in your car or your colleague's car or a car owned by the state of Delaware. Your UM and UIM follows you regardless of which car you're in.
So the clearest statement of your position is under Delaware law, it is against public policy for there to be any exclusion in a policy limiting access to underinsured motorist coverage. The master policy endorsement, which is what the insurance company relied on, is an exclusion.
It is.
And the court so characterized it in its opinion. Therefore, that exclusion has no effect.
That's our position. Yeah. And again, turning back to Frank versus Horizon, which is sort of the seminal case for this court held that if the General Assembly wanted to allow any exclusions in UM or UIM, it would have done so specifically like it did in 2118. Turning to the cases now, as I said earlier, the first time this court struck down a provision was State Farm versus Abramowitz. That was the physical contact requirement in UM or UIM cases. The court said, no, that's an exclusion that's not permissible. The second one of note was then Vice Chancellor Hartnett in the Jeans versus Nationwide. That case involved someone who was operating a dark bus and was injured, and he tried to make a UIM claim against his personal coverage. And they said, no, we have an exclusion that says if you're operating a vehicle with passengers for fee, we're not going to cover you. And Vice Chancellor Hart said, no, you can't have any exclusions. And he said, UIM does not depend on the specific auto or the use of the auto. And I would submit that that's the issue in this case, is how was the auto being used at the time. The next one was the other motor vehicle exclusion, which was Frank versus Horizon and Holden versus Aetna. State Farm versus Washington was 1994. That was the named driver exclusion. It was valid with regard to liability claims, but invalid with regard to a UIM claim. Following that was Cropper versus State Farm, which then Judge Ridgely struck down an exclusion that said if you're operating a government-owned vehicle, you don't get UM or UIM. And Judge Ridgely said that's invalid. And our position is simple. Clearwater should not get the benefit of their exclusion when State Farm, Horizon, and Nationwide were denied the benefit of their exclusion in Abramowitz, Franks, Holden, Washington, Jeans, and Cropper.
Well, the trial judge, the reasoning of the trial judge appears to be that before there could be any access to the UIM coverage in a personal liability insurance policy, the policy has to at least be applicable. What is your response to that?
That's a distinction without a difference under 3902 in this court's case law. Nationwide, Horizon, State Farm, and the cases I've been talking about could have said the same thing. The trial judge said it wasn't, quote, triggered. And how is this policy that says we're not going to give you coverage if you're carrying property for hire, how is it any different than the Nationwide policy, which says we're not going to provide you coverage if you're carrying passengers for a fee? Presumably that same argument was raised. Again, I don't think there's really a distinction, and I'm not sure that when the court used the term
It's a semantic distinction, but not a legally substantive distinction.
Well, there's no support for it in the trial court's opinion, and there's also no cases that have been cited to this court by my opposing counsel that would support that assumption. Let me turn and talk briefly about the cases that Clearwater relies upon.
Well, before you do that, in this case, your client was basically a pedestrian, wasn't he?
Yes.
So would that make any difference?
No, UIM would still apply as long as when he was injured, he was doing something that was related to the operation, use, or maintenance of the vehicle. He had pulled over on Route 40 to check on a noise coming from the trailer, and it has not been raised by the carrier as a defense.
It wasn't like the drive-by shooting.
No, exactly. Right. Let me talk about Banaszak versus Progressive, and I'm just taking these cases in order of the way they were cited in Clearwater's brief. That was a reformation case, and the issue was whether or not UM or UIM had to be rejected in writing. There was no exclusion issue in that case. The next case was Collins versus State Farm. The question in that case was whether the plaintiff resided with the insured at the time of the accident such that she could access her relative's policy. The jury found that she was not. It wasn't an exclusion that was at issue. St. Paul versus Metropolitan, the question for the court in that case was which UIM policy is primary, the vehicle that you're in or your personal vehicle that's at home in the driveway. And the court followed insurance law, which typically says the vehicle you're in is primary. Again, it wasn't an exclusion that was an issue. Justice Jacobs, you mentioned State Farm versus Buckingham. That was an assault case. There was no exclusion that excluded assault. The question was whether or not it arose out of an ownership, maintenance, or use of a motor vehicle. Same thing, Justice Holland with Nationwide versus Royal, which was decided back in 1997. That was a drive-by shooting case. Again, there was no exclusions for drive-by shooting. And Ruggiero, which is a Superior Court case that Clearwater cited, the question was whether or not the definition of insured included an employee who was operating her personal vehicle on off-company hours. And the court, the Superior Court, has said, no, that would just convert this policy into covering anybody anytime that works for the company. We don't think that there's any difference between carrying passengers for a fee or operating a motor vehicle from this case, which was carrying property for hire. As an insurance carrier, Clearwater has the burden of drafting policies that comply with the jurisdictions in which it sells insurance. Its argument that its policy is, quote, specialized insurance, which is limited to circumstances and times, should be directed not to this court but to the General Assembly. The General Assembly drafted 3902 without any exclusions. Pursuant to that section, Mr. Castillo, my client, purchased the policy and has paid the premiums. Under 3902 and this court's unambiguous line of cases, he's entitled to the UIM in the policy. If the court has no further questions, my argument is concluded. I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay.
May it please the court, Jeff Krawitz on behalf of Clearwater Insurance Company. Let me begin by making an observation about the plaintiff below and the appellant here. The observation being that they concede to this court that had, unfortunately, had it been Mr. Castillo who had been in an accident and caused an injury, that there would not be coverage under this policy. They concede that to this court.
There wouldn't be third-party liability coverage.
There wouldn't be coverage. The policy would not, if he caused an injury while under the dispatch.
There would not be liability coverage.
There would not be liability coverage. But that's.
But he is saying that that doesn't matter.
I understand. I understand that, Your Honor, that that's what he's saying. I just want to take a brief moment and say, what is this? What is this non-trucking liability? What is some, as it's called in trucking industry parlance, bobtail? This came about because there are thousands upon thousands of owner-operators who lease their equipment, lease their power unit or tractor to motor carriers. And when they do that, under the federal scheme and under the federal regulations, they are provided with coverage through the motor carrier. And it has become standard in the industry. What happened was these owner-operators were under dispatch control or auspices of a motor carrier. They would go off dispatch, and they would then be driving these vehicles without any coverage. Along came this non-trucking or insurance for non-trucking use. Bobtail really refers to driving without a trailer. There's deadheading where you're driving with an empty trailer, and it all kind of got lumped into the term bobtail, but it really was insurance for non-trucking use. And what that did is to provide. It served a public good. It provided coverage for a fraction of the time, admittedly, for a sliver of the time that the tractor may be operated, but being operated by the truck driver when he or she is not under the dispatch control or auspices of a certified motor carrier.
Let me stop you at that point.
Sure.
Perhaps we would have a different situation if the motor carrier actually provided the insurance that it was supposed to provide. But apparently, Mr. Castillo has no coverage for UIM, UM benefits under that policy. So, and you agree, correct?
Well, I frankly do not recall what coverages were in place. IMF policy was not at issue
in any
of the litigation.
Based upon my understanding of the record and what opposing counsel just said, there was no UIM, UM coverage under his trucking policy, if you want to call that. So he's got a policy that gives him no coverage and another policy that gives him coverage. You think that the court ought to say, well, too bad that you didn't get the coverage you were hoping for from your trucking company. We're not giving you coverage because you were driving the truck at the time. You know, you were operating the truck for business.
I would respond as follows. First of all, with all due respect to counsel, I don't think the IMF coverage is at issue or is before this court.
Well, but isn't the whole idea of your position that there are two sets of coverage that, when joined together, cover the universe, if you will? So there's coverage for when you're working, and you provide coverage for when you're not working. And between the two of them, the driver's got coverage all the time.
In the railroad, right. There's always coverage on the truck. But if you take Mr. Castillo's logic and you carry it to its end, and I think this argument was made to this court, then it does not matter. There is open-ended UIM coverage. Doesn't matter whether you're a driver of the truck, a driver of a car, a passenger in another car. At any time, anywhere, there would be UIM coverage. And I think that even 3902, I don't believe that was the intent to allow there to be just open-ended, broad, wherever you are, in whatever vehicle you are, whatever your status is, there's UIM coverage.
Well, isn't that the way it works for a normal passenger, a normal personal insurance policy for a car?
Well, right, for a normal insurance policy for a car, but that's where the argument is that this isn't a car. This is a very specialized policy, which is bought pursuant to an arm's-length negotiated lease agreement between an experienced owner-operator and a certified motor carrier. And therefore, given the specialized nature, I think it is critical not only to look at the intent of the parties, but the reasonable expectations of the parties when this policy is sold.
Well, and if I can just follow up for a moment,
sure,
on Justice Berger's question, there really are only three possibilities here. That is, if the plaintiff is going to have any insurance remedy at all. One is that he's entitled to access the UIM coverage in his own personal policy. Another is that he has no coverage. And the third is, he must access the UIM provision in the trucking company's insurance policy, if there is one. You started out, by trying to locate this case within a bigger picture of industry-wide practice. And I think that having done that, it's fair to follow up by asking whether there is any industry-wide practice or requirement to have UIM coverage for drivers in the standard trucking company policy. And the second question is, what about this particular case?
Okay. First question. I think it varies from policy to policy. It depends on the symbols, the scope of the coverage. When the motor carrier... There's no uniform policy. When a motor carrier purchases insurance, and depending on the symbols that they provide for owned autos, any autos, owned and hired or leased autos, it could be a variation. There's no standard policy in the industry.
Okay. So if that's true,
yes.
Is it also true that it would seem to follow that there's no mandate, no congressional mandate or any other legal mandate requiring that the carrier to have UIM, UI coverage in its policy for its driver?
It is, in my experience, been left up to the negotiation between the parties.
So unless the driver is able to access, first purchase his own personal policy with that coverage, with the UIM coverage, then they're potentially unprotected.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not sure I understand the question. When you say first purchase, if he goes to the motor carrier and says,
unless he is legally, the law permits him to purchase his own UIM coverage, which would apply in any event,
sure,
whether or not the carrier has such coverage in its own policy, then the driver would be vulnerable to precisely what happened here.
Potentially, but again, given that he's a Delaware resident, it would, again, in most states, there's the ability to buy or have UIM coverage on personal vehicles.
I'm not talking about personal vehicles. I'm talking about this case, this fact pattern.
In this case, I couldn't, and it's not before this court, whether Mr. Castillo went to IMF and said, listen, as part of the lease agreement, here's the coverages I want from IMF. I don't know, and that's not the issue.
But I gather that what flows from your legal position is that the only Mr. Castillo's only remedy would have been to negotiate it for some type of UIM coverage purchased through the carrier's policy.
Yes, and I say that, Your Honor, because Mr. Castillo knew negotiated lease terms that said that he is to have a non-trucking liability policy with certain minimum coverage, and went out and purchased the policy. Mr. Castillo had reasonable expectations, and it is not beyond this court to find that his reasonable expectations.
Well, if we're going to be talking about his expectations, which I gather there's no record on, then don't you have to posit that those expectations would be informed by the case law as well as by the policy language?
I would agree. But let me go back to it's purchased for a very particular, very narrow, very limited purpose. And I think that that Judge Scott, with all the items that were listed by my opposing counsel as getting right, that Judge Scott got that right too. This is a policy that was known to have a very limited purpose. There is
assume that. I don't want to get tied up with semantics. Let's suppose it was an exclusion. I know your position is and the policy wasn't in effect, but if we just assume hypothetically it was an exclusion, what's your response to the argument that under the statute, exclusions are not permitted?
My response is as follows. There's certainly nothing in 3902 A or B that specifically says you can have exclusions or you can't have exclusions. I mean, the case law certainly, I acknowledge this court over the years, has found numerous types of exclusions on particular factual scenarios to be void as against public policy. But my response, Your Honor, would be that I don't want to say mirror image, but the decision in Ruggiero, I think, does resonate and should resonate on this issue.
That's a Superior Court decision, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a, if I may just, it's a, it was unpublished. It was a Superior Court, June of 2004 decision. What was recognized by the court in that decision, one, looking at, is there clear and unambiguous language in a policy, and what were the reasonable expectations? And this woman who's driving her personal car was also a corporate officer and also a designated listed insured driver on the corporate policy for her employer. She's in an accident. She's paid by the tortfeasor. She then turns to the corporate policy for UIM coverage as a designated listed driver. And the court said, at the time you were in this accident, you were neither driving a company car nor furthering their business. Now, it's a bit of the, with Mr. Castillo, he's not, they stipulate, this is not a non-trucking situation. In Ruggiero, that exclusion or that policy provision to say we're not going to cover you when you're not furthering our business.
I'm having trouble understanding your response to Justice Holland's questions in analytic terms. We agree with it or not, there is something elegant about the simplicity of the Mr. Castillo's position. That is, the law forbids any endorsements that limit UIM coverage. The provision at issue here is an endorsement, ergo it is ineffective. Do you agree with the premise, the major premise, and the minor premise? And if not, which one do you disagree with? Where's the dispute here analytically?
Analytically, here the dispute is that, assuming again to accept Justice Holland's question, at the assume it's an exclusion in the policy, you don't trigger the policy.
It is an exclusion.
It isn't. If it is an exclusion in the policy, the question is it inappropriate to say when you're not, that this coverage only applies when you're not in the business of a motor carrier or you're not carrying property.
So there are exclusions and there are exclusions, good ones and bad ones, you want to define them.
Good, bad, fair, reasonable, anticipated intent of the parties is the way I would approach that issue.
And that in that argument, I gather, is supported only, in your view, only by one Superior Court case. We have no precedent that validates the distinction you're making.
Correct. There is no precedent that I can point to that I am aware of in this state. There have been other cases. I don't think they're on point factually, but there have been other cases that have talked about qualifying for coverage under a policy.
Well, under the facts in Ruggiero, the same facts, if the driver had another policy on her own personal vehicle, separate from the one she was driving, and that had UM coverage, she'd be eligible to go against that, wouldn't she?
If she had another personal vehicle.
With coverage. UM coverage.
Yes, as I read the statute, she would. But again, I go to, if I can just address a second, the qualifying coverage. There have been cases, again, not factually on point, but National Union versus Fisher, I think, which is a Supreme Court decision from 1997, is interesting in the fact that it talked about whether the police officer could qualify for coverage under the policy, depending on his geographic position relative to his car. Now, although that case ultimately went back and it was a second, he got coverage for a different reason and an ambiguity in the policy, the decision by the Supreme Court in 1997 says, how do you qualify? You got to qualify by being within a certain geographic position with your car. And I say here, it's as I think Judge Scott recognized, how do you qualify? How do you trigger this policy to qualify for coverage? And it's clear on its face. It's unambiguous. And there was no dispute, and it's conceded, that the non-trucking, in order to be in a non-trucking situation, you cannot be under dispatch or control of a motor carrier. And Mr. Castillo acknowledges that this accident did not happen during any non-trucking period.
Well, let's put aside this policy under these specific trucking circumstances, and let's assume it's a personal policy. How is this distinguishable from the case that said you can't exclude coverage when you're operating the vehicle for hire?
I think Your Honor is referring to the case with the Dart bus. That was a decision where that court said we don't We don't care whether you're driving for a fee, your vehicle, or any other vehicle.
But it said that specifically with respect to the UM coverage, right?
On the personal policy.
So that's what we're trying to get to by way of analogy. If you've got a personal policy, putting aside all the trucking connections, in the personal policy, you can have exclusions, according to your colleague, for two out of three types of coverage, but you can't have an exclusion for UM coverage. Does that appear to be where the law is with personal policies?
That appears to be where the law is in personal policies in this state.
And so to that extent, your argument is that this case is distinguishable because this really isn't
a personal policy,
although it may look like a personal policy because it was supposed to provide coverage for you when you weren't driving the truck for business.
It may look like a personal policy, but because of its specialized nature in the trucking industry, it is distinguishable from your, I don't want to say run-of-the-mill, but ordinary personal auto policy.
Okay. So, all right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm out of time.
Members of the court, there's no such thing as a non-personal auto policy in the state. Justice Jacobs asked whether or not or questioned about federal regulations being implicated, and there are federal regulations that govern interstate trucking. One of them, for example, is you have to have $1 million liability policy if you are going to cross state lines. As far as I know, there are no similar federal statutes that deal with UM or UIM. That's left to the states to handle.
Wasn't the whole purpose of this coverage to provide what we can characterize in the generic way as personal coverage when you weren't working for the trucking company?
That would appear to be what the policy was sold for, correct. But Clearwater had an obligation before it sold the policy to Mr. Castillo to confirm that, in fact, that was a valid restriction with regard to UM/UIM. There was a question a hint that maybe Mr. Castillo was somehow a sophisticated purchaser. That's not in the record below, but nevertheless, if he was a sophisticated purchaser, he probably would have known that, in fact, UM/UIM follows you and is not dependent on the vehicle you're in the state of Delaware. Turning back to...
So let's go back to your client. Let's suppose he didn't have this particular policy that seems to be related to trucking. Let's suppose he had another personal vehicle with another personal policy. It's your position under the Delaware statute that, first, you can't exclude anything with regard to UM in a personal policy unless it's offered and it's in writing, and I understand the distinction. But your position would be if he had another vehicle and another policy, the UM coverage would apply to what happened to him in this case.
Yes, and he does. He has a minimum limits policy with State Farm.
Takes us into our line of cases that say if you're a risk-adverse person, you can buy multiple coverages and stack them.
Right. He can't access that State Farm, though, because Clearwater is first in line, because that was the vehicle he was in. That's the court's decision, and unfortunately the name has escaped me. But recently, the issue was which policy pays first. I think it was 1997, and I want to say it was Hearst. But there was a question about whether or not in the record there's any evidence that the carrier for IMF denied UM, and it is in the record. It's in the appendix at 400. They denied it on the basis that IMF rejected it. So that is in the record.
Well, let's go back. Let's suppose you don't prevail in this case and he doesn't have coverage. And then there's no one to go first. So if he does have another policy, then it would respond, right?
Correct. Correct, yeah. The Clearwater's position is this would provide for unlimited UM or UIM coverage. And that is our position, because that's the position that the General Assembly took when it drafted 3902. they didn't provide for exclusions. And this court has recognized that for 30 years. So that is indeed our position. There's a question about whether or not Mr. Castillo should have looked at the policy language. And I referenced earlier that if he did and he was so sophisticated, he would have known that UIM is personal to the purchaser and it follows him regardless of the vehicle he's in. But you don't look at the reasonable expectations of the party when the insurance language is clear. That's well-established black-letter Delaware law. So that's irrelevant. What Clearwater and Mr. Castillo intended is not the analysis. And going back to Ruggiero, Mrs. Ruggiero was not the named insured. She didn't purchase the policy. She didn't pay the premiums. She was just simply an employee who was listed on their list of, these are people who will operate our vehicles on behalf of our company. Okay? So she didn't pay for it. She wasn't the named insured. And there wasn't an exclusion issue in the case. And, again, it's a Superior Court case, not binding on this court. Going back to the whole trigger issue, the policy was triggered at the time of the accident. That's when it was triggered. And the question is, do the exclusions apply? And, again, our position has been that under well-established Delaware case law that it is invalid. Thank you, members of the court.
Thank you. And thank you both. The court appreciates your arguments. We'll take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.